Hello, Dissectomaniacs. We are not starting the show just yet because we have something cool to announce for you. Sunday, August 28th at 5 p.m., Dissecting the 80s is performing a second live show, this time as part of the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. I'm very excited. We're going to be on South Street at Tattooed Moms at 5 p.m. It's
a very fun venue if you've never been.
Yeah, I've never been myself, so I'm excited to go there for the first time. But
I've been a couple times. The upstairs is this really cool performance space. It's got some couches, some regular chairs, a couple what look like old bumper cars or like roller coaster cars. I'm pretty sure they're bumper cars. It's like two or three of those that people can sit in. A floor to ceiling to wall is covered in like stickers and drawings and like graffiti. It's super fun.
And I'm excited because one of the earliest concerts I ever went to was just down the street at the Theater of Living Arts. So it's cool to be performing just steps away from a venue I love to see performances at. So find out more on the Facebook page. We're going to announce what we're doing probably early in August. So stay tuned on the Facebook page and we'll let you know probably our next episode of this show.
Don't you forget the cheesesteak.
And this is coming out on August 1st, so if you want to join us at the Baltimore Podcast Festival, that is this coming Saturday, August 6th, 5 to 8 p.m. You should find out more at bemorepodfest.com.
Don't forget the old bay.
Welcome to the 50th episode of Dissecting the 80s. I am one half of the mega podcasting powers, Trip Lano. With me, as always, a man who mercifully doesn't clad his entire life in a single color and is probably way better at crime than every single person in the movie we're about to talk about. The Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Lano. And that's entirely possible.
I think it has to be true because, boy, are they bad at crime in this movie.
Except for Roseanne Barr.
We'll get into it. But we're talking about an Andrew pick this week.
She-Devil. We gotta go back, buddy. We gotta go dissect the 80s. It's Ed Begley Jr., Marty. Something's going to be done about you, Ed Begley Jr.
When the mega powers explode.
I'm talking about the 80s.
Great Scott.
Cream of the crop. Oh, yeah.
Mega powers, yeah.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
So why did we do this movie? This was your pick. Was there a reason?
You said there was an open space, so let's just do She-Devil.
No, I know, but like, why did you want to do you?
Oh, because I enjoy this movie.
Oh, you've seen
it's something. It's something. Yeah, it's something I found on a whim on Netflix.
Okay.
Because I love Meryl Streep because I'm a human.
No longer on Netflix, by the way.
It is not anymore. It's upsetting. And Roseanne Barr, I think, is the things that I've seen her in. I've found her funny. And enjoyable, and it just seemed silly.
I didn't realize you had seen it when you said, "Let's do this on the show."
Oh yeah. And to me, I saw it a while, like a year or so ago. So I've seen many movies since in between, and it kind of reminds me. You're not going to get this completely. It reminds me of like Heathers meets Mean Girls for adults.
Yeah, no, I pick up what you're putting down there.
Because stylistically,
I mean, it's nowhere near
Heathers.
As good as either of those movies.
No, but stylistically, it's very Heathers. Yeah. It's got that sort of dreamy, silly, not quite grounded in reality thing going.
No, I'm with you on that. I guess before we dive into this movie, actually, let me do this one thing. This is our 50th episode, so congratulations. It's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing something a little bit different for our second anniversary episode, which is going to be coming out the last Monday in August. It's going to be vastly different from what you normally get from us. So on this episode of the show, we're going to do the stuff we normally would do for that second anniversary show. We're going to add our Hall of Fame members. We've got a quick gift-giving segment. All that will be done at the end of the show, so stick around after.
God, I hope we don't have the same Hall of Fame pick. I just thought of it, and I was like, oh, fuck.
I'm dying to know, but as always, we don't talk about this beforehand, so it'll be really fun if we have to scramble. Maybe I'll let you go first, because I have a baby.
Please let me go first. Please let me go first.
So anyway, we will be doing all that on this episode. It's also going to mean that this episode is officially the retirement of Hot Tag Taglines. It's a good bit. We stuck with it for two full years, basically, but it's going to go on to the Great Bit Graveyard in the Sky, so it'll forever be immortalized on the website, but this is our last Hashtag Taglines. Andrew does the theme song. I think it's funnier, or we might find something else that we like, but that today, this episode is the end of that era, so congratulations, Hashtag Taglines, on 50 episodes. We'll probably not miss you that much, because we stopped liking that bit around episode 8. So
I'd say episode 20.
So yeah, that's going to be the end of that particular segment. But yeah, so this is going to be treated by us and by you, I guess, out there, as our second anniversary episode, because our second anniversary episode proper is going to be real different. We're really excited about that, but it's going to be just a totally different thing.
A departure from the norm.
Yeah, but right back to normal after that. It's not a new format forever, just that it's going to be weird because it's our second anniversary. So, let's get into She-Devil.
It opens with some fun title sequence going on with the animation.
Yeah, yeah.
And then dives right into the 80s glam makeup counter.
Yeah, I kind of dug that, and Roseanne's mole game is on point.
Oh, it is a hell of a mole.
Yeah, I think it's like a stunt mole. I don't think it's really on her face.
Obviously, because she doesn't have a mole.
I'm pretty sure. I was going to say, suddenly I was like, oh, does she really have a mole? Are we terrible? No, she doesn't. She does not.
No, because later in the movie, it goes away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good call. She's like getting ready. She's going to a makeup counter. She tries on this dress.
Around all the pretty people. She's, I'm not pretty.
Right. And she's getting her hair done, and we see on TV is Robin Leach, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
I was going to say it's Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous voice guy.
And he is talking to Meryl Streep, who's playing a romance
Mary
novelist.
Mary Fisher.
There you go, Mary Fisher. A romance novelist who exclusively lives life in pink.
Mm-hmm.
Like every accessory. It's like Barbie's dream house came to life, and then she'd moved in.
And then Meryl Streep killed Barbie.
Like, she has a pink hair dryer. She has a pink laptop. She has...
I love her pink laptop. It's so wonderful. Because we don't see laptops that often in our movies.
No, we do not. And it's a Zenith pink laptop.
I wrote laptop, and then I went, wait a minute. Were word processors just a thing? Where it just had that functionality?
I don't know. I guess it was probably a word processor.
Because, I thought that was the next evolution of the typewriter. I thought, but I could be wrong, because I'm
a baby. You're probably correct. Maybe it wasn't actually a full-on laptop. We would do the research, but you know what show you're listening to. Anyway, we get introduced to the fact that she has a mom who's been zombified, basically, at an old folks' home. Mm-hmm. She's just, zoning into the middle distance in a wheelchair.
Meryl Streep drinks champagne.
Yeah. And then we get introduced to Ed Begley Jr., who is, frizzle frazzled as a busy businessman.
Yeah, a CPA.
Yeah.
He's also way not hot enough for this role.
Okay, thank you. We should just start with that, because I found out later that the two other people considered this role
were way hotter.
Was one Jeff Daniels, who, okay, improvement, but still not what I'm looking for, and Jeff Bridges. Like, okay, you made the third... You picked the worst of the three options. Like, you had three shots and you missed all three times.
I'm sure Jeff Bridges didn't want to do the movie.
I don't know. 89 Jeff Bridges, this isn't that long after Tron. I don't know that he's, some megastar.
Maybe he didn't want to do it, though. Like, personally, it was just like, nah.
You know what helps those arguments? Big
money.
Big old dump trucks full of money. You have to pay somebody really handsome to be this character, or the movie is asinine, and that's exactly what happens here. Because
mm-hmm.
Ed Begley Jr. I'm not saying Ed Begley Jr. is some hideous chut. Don't say
he's
me
not
that
a foot.
Letter, Ed, you're a perfectly handsome enough man. I love what you've done with the electric.
He's
car.
Not a yeah. He's not a foot. He's not a horse.
It's not
face.
Like
he's
stuck
just...
Danny DeVito, who a man I love, but is clearly a man that would not be in this role. But Ed Begley Jr. is nowhere near hot enough.
He's not. And I will say that till the cows come home, till the day I die, because that's my biggest critique with this movie is that. You have this, kind of heartthrob-y, womanizer.
Right.
And it's fucking Ed Begley Jr.
Yeah, his hair's all flopping all over the place. Again, I like Ed Begley well enough, but he is totally wrong for this.
Mm-hmm. Acts it well.
Yeah, no,
but
visually,
which is horrible to say, I admit that, visually, not the right fit.
Yeah. Speaking of Ed Begley Jr., I got a question for you. Did you look him up?
No. Okay. I mean, kind of, but no.
Okay, so he started acting in 1967, about 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How many credits does he have on IMDb? Now, mind you, did a lot of television, like guest spots on television. So
yeah.
I'm giving you that clue so you can get in the appropriate ballpark.
50 years?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 75 to 125.
301.
Are you kidding me?
He has been in six, like an average of six credited.
He's got like porn star credits going on.
Speaking of porn star credits, the director of this movie, Susan Seidelman, directed like two or three softcore porn things right after this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a weird jump.
And I have to imagine She-Devil didn't exactly set the world on fire box office-wise.
Pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, Roseanne is like getting ready for this big old party, which happens to be at the Met. And it's like a super cool party. There's people everywhere in tuxedos. Roseanne's wearing like a mom dress and looking way out of place.
She's wearing something Sophia would have worn in The Golden Girls.
Yes. Yeah, that is accurate. And then she spills wine on Meryl Streep, and that turns into Ed Begley Jr. trying to get into Meryl Streep's pants, which should have had a response of, oh, you surely be joking. And instead...
That was a good Meryl Streep voice in this movie.
Thanks. And instead, Ed Begley Jr. drives his wife home, stops at the top of the street, and makes her walk to the house, and then drives...
Well, he drives an hour to the Hamptons to drop off Meryl
miles.
Streep.
That's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Each way to take her home. And, oh, by the way, stoops her brains out all over her pink house.
That's
not a euphemism. Like, her home is literally pink.
Yeah. Ew. Ew. I was curious what you were going to think of this movie, because it's very, like I said, it's not, there's no realism about it. So, like, he meets Meryl Streep and instantly, like, oh, they're going to bone. And Roseanne Barr clearly knows they're going to bone.
Yes.
And there's this whole, what is going on? Why is no one saying anything?
So my issue with the movie is mostly, like, one, Ed Begley Jr. is totally the wrong person for it. But the other thing, too, is we're kind of geared up in a way that we're supposed to be rooting for Roseanne, but...
But she's a sociopath.
Yeah, and so, like, I think it's terrible that people cheat on their spouses, but I don't think the appropriate reaction for someone... the appropriate punishment for someone for cheating on their spouse, which, again, is a bad thing, I think... Obviously, I'm a human, but she destroys their home, like, burns it up, everything in it, including, like...
She also kills her kid's pet.
Yep. Yeah. Well, not on purpose.
You
think she put that hamster in the food maliciously?
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, because isn't this around bunny boiling time?
I guess. So, we didn't get to that, but there's a dinner party scene where she cooks the kid's hamster by mistake. But she also, like, destroys his career. She wrecks this other relationship, which I guess, fine, that's a fairly nice thing. But he ends up, like, in this movie, like, things are pretty terrible for Ed Begley Jr. And, like, yeah, he's a dick.
But here's the thing. She didn't, like, lie and frame him for crimes he didn't commit. He did everything they said.
Right, but she didn't know that at the point she starts this wheels in motion.
No, but she just figured that out, thankfully.
All right, anyway, we'll circle back to that. Let's get through a little
bit. We're now unraveling the whole plot.
Yeah, let's get through the little bit of the movie before we talk about it in circles. So, one of the many...
4:30. I was going to say it's 4:30 in the morning, and she's reading the Mary Fisher novel.
Yeah, and it's one of the many parts of the movie that drive me crazy with Roseanne's character, because somebody at some stage of the production was like, you know what we need to have Roseanne do? Eat a lot of fucking donuts.
Yep.
She has a box of Dunkin' Donuts, like a dozen, not like a, oh, I grabbed a donut or two on the way home, but a box of donuts next to her bed. And then, like, frequently throughout this movie, she's just, like, shoving a donut underneath Claire into her face. And it's like, look, I get that Roseanne is a heavy woman, but she's funny, and all you're asking her to do is shove chocolate on her face. That's a problem.
Yeah.
So...
It's sort of that Melissa McCarthy thing that drove me nuts. For the past couple of years, of like,
yeah, she gets to do more than shove food in her face in most of the movies she's in, thankfully.
I know, but it's all the jokes are like, you're funny because you're fat, and I was like, I want to find whoever said that and slap them, because like, she is genuinely funny.
Right,
drives me nuts.
So anyway, Ed Begley Jr. finally decides to come home, and I guess this party must have been a Friday night because everybody's like having breakfast together, including freshly squeezed orange juice that Roseanne is making for this schmuck's breakfast.
Yeah, and he calls her a bad mother later, which, like, she's not a great mother.
No.
But she's fresh squeezing some OJ. So, like, points.
She's cooking dinner. She's doing her best. Like, she's not a good cook, and she's trying. And then his response is like, oh, I'm disgusting.
You're a human disaster.
You're human garbage. Yeah, it's terrible.
Like, Ed Begley, this is your wheel. This is your ballpark. This is your leagues.
I mean, I'm sure there are big, I guess, like, write in, tweet in if you're, like, a huge Ed Begley Jr. fan. Because, like, clearly somebody likes the guy. He's working a lot. But
I don't think he's bad. That's not what I'm saying. He is just not.
For me, Ed Begley Jr.'s, like, ideal wheelhouse is, like, really angry customer at a restaurant.
Uh-huh. Principal.
Principal's a good one. He's, like, a guy that comes in, makes a couple nice plays, and then exits the movie. Like, we don't want him. I don't need him there the whole time. I want him to come in, provide a little comic relief, and move on. Like, he gets his coffee at the coffee shop in front of our lead actors and has a funny reaction, and then he walks out of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's because that's mostly what he plays. But I think...
You mean special guest on this episode?
Yeah, exactly.
Of this show?
Exactly. I just don't get it. And it's so... It makes the
movie... Like, you need a Chris Hemsworth for this role.
I think Chris Hemsworth is probably too attractive because you want him to be, like, every man handsome.
So who would you think?
Doing a modern version of this?
Yeah, assuming just today's standards.
I would think we'd go with maybe a Wilson brother.
Okay.
An Owen or what's the other one's name?
Luke.
Luke Wilson could be the guy where he's, like, attractive enough that you believe Meryl Streep could punch down and be with him, and he could... You know, punch up a little bit and be with Meryl Streep, but, like, that he's a average-looking dude. A handsome dude, but, like, an average-looking dude.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Like, that's the wheelhouse we need to be in. And instead, we're down in, like, a John C. Reilly territory. Again, man I love, but not the guy who should be playing the heartthrob. Like, it's just not it's not him.
Not the one women throw themselves at.
Right. Especially Meryl Streep.
Yeah. Well, Meryl Streep and then that hot young thing later.
Yeah. Like, what the hell, movie?
Literally everyone is just like, yeah, Ed Begley Jr., panties off.
I feel like the description of this podcast is going to be like an hour and 25 minutes of Trip and Andrew trying to figure out what the hell was going on with Ed Begley Jr. in 1989.
Is Ed Begley Jr. that attractive? Is Ed Begley Jr. that attractive? More importantly, is Ed Begley Jr. that attractive? All this and more on Is Ed Begley Jr. That Attractive with Trip and Andrew.
We're just going to go... We could just change, have a new podcast that's just the Ed Begley cast, and we go thing by thing through his career. That's a lot of episodes.
And everything Begley.
That's it. That's the name.
We got it.
Write that copyrighted.
We got one.
That's copyrighted. Nobody can steal everything Begley.
We just pick one Ed Begley Jr. thing and watch it every week. It's going to go for a million years. We could release an episode a day and last a year.
Yep. Truly could. Anyway, so we get a montage of the affair. Of, you know, he keeps being, you know, sneaking off, and they're like, you're going to come home tonight, Dad? And he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the kids are, like, really aware of this affair.
Everybody is. It's very obvious.
But, like, I feel like once the kids figure it out, it's just always like, oh, poor kids.
No, the whole thing, I'm with you, the whole thing is, like, a bummer. Like, it's a pretty bummer movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it saves itself, because I think it's funny.
No, it's funny. I'm just saying, like, it's one of those comedies where, like, if you think too hard about the premise, you're like, oh, wait, that's a huge bummer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what happened with me and Grace and Frankie. I should say, me and the show, Grace and Frankie.
I got like 8 minutes into the first episode of that and was like, this is not for me.
I was told, like, this is a great comedy, and I watched the first episode, and I was like, when does someone tell a joke?
Yeah, that's a new thing.
I was like, your premise for your show can't be, we've been cheating on our wives for the past 20 years and are leaving you. Good luck.
Well, This is
a... And then expects it to be a comedy. Like, that's not a comedy.
Well, this is a bigger discussion. Because, like, Orange is the New Black is not a comedy. Like, there are jokes in it, but it is not a comedy. It's an hour-long drama. Like, it's all about relationships and fighting and gang territory and stuff. And I don't think it's a bad show, but it is stupefying to me that it gets classified as a comedy. There's like maybe one joke an episode.
Is it really a comedy? Oh, for the award shows and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Uzo Aduba won Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series.
Yeah, I think they eventually wised up to it, but they...
Yeah, first season was comedy, second season was drama.
Right.
Because, like, I was like, you can't split that up, guys.
Well, like, but even the first season of that show is not a comedy. Like, there's maybe one joke in each episode. It's just not a comedy to me.
I don't know. I think that they can be an hour long. I don't see a problem with that.
I mean, obviously there's exceptions, and like, for a while there, USA was making hour long shows that were essentially comedy, but even Psych has like a drama mystery element to every episode, so I just think it's weird, and this movie is no exception, where if you're too big of a bummer, you can't be telling me jokes.
Or you have to not focus on the bummer so much.
Yeah.
Like, your plot can't be the bummer.
Yeah, because, like, let's just get to it, because we'll get our way there. So... The affair has a montage that we go to the grocery store. Roseanne's going to make a nice dinner for her husband because he's...
Her shithead kid is poking milk.
He's stabbing milk with, like, I don't know what he has, a pocket knife, but the milk is, like, spurting into the aisle. Like, it's just...
It's like the fountains of the Bellagio.
And then we cut to Ed Begley Jr. and Meryl Streep doing it in her big, round, of course, pink bed. And then Roseanne... It's a great edit. It goes from, like... Clearly penis to whack, chopping a zucchini with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
The person who edited this also edited Silence of the Lambs, by the way.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I feel like all of the parts of this movie, like the cinematography, the editing, the story, the set, like the production design, all the parts are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like together sometimes it gets a little wobbly.
Yeah, it's also like there's a lot of things moving. There's a lot of parts moving in this movie, which makes it like... Not that it's complicated to follow, but there's a lot of, like, things set in motion early, then come back later kind of deals, which, you know,
yeah,
makes
you have to remember what's going on.
Yes.
His parents come over for dinner, and she's clearly upset with him, and he's like, don't get into this now. And you're like, dude, you were clearly having an affair.
Yeah,
like
she you lose, buddy, she got you, and now you have to deal with it. And instead,
it's like in Vibes when Jeff Goldblum's fiance is like, well, you can forget about this, or you can make this a thing. And it's like, when you're the one doing the cheating, you don't get to make that call.
Nope, you super don't.
That is not your job.
Yeah, your job is to get caught and then try to atone for your mistake that you made, or leave, but certainly not to be like, damn it, woman, cook dinner for my terrible parents.
Mm-hmm. And so he's like, cheese and crackers, you idiot. And she's like, fighting back tears of like, I'm trying my best. And she comes out and trips walking into the room, and the plate goes flying, and he catches it. There's like two crackers on the ground, and he reacts.
Spider-Man's
as though,
that plate, let's call it what it is.
He does it's a magic thing. And like, there's two crackers on the ground maybe, and she's sprawled flat, and when his mother goes to help her up, he's like, she's fine, she's an adult. And it's like, dude.
Yeah. And then that gets followed
like,
up.
What the hell, dude?
He's such a scumbag. Like, don't get me wrong. He's pretty good in this movie at being this person that I want to kick in the eyeballs. But also, he is not attractive enough to be playing this part.
Yeah. But, like, everything he says is just, like, being an asshole to his wife. And you're like, dude, you're still married to her. You haven't broken that off yet.
Nope. Like, this is your home. This is your children that you're saying these things about their mother in front of them. You're a huge asshole.
And like, he even says, like, I only married her because she was like, I wish I'd never married her, I only did it because she was pregnant, and his kids are sitting at the table.
It's crazy town. And that's what I'm talking about with this movie being like a bummer. Like, I just started to be like, what won't someone think of these children? Like,
I mean, yeah, this little boy is a shithead, but the girl is fine, apparently.
Yeah, well, she's on screen for like 48 total seconds, so it's hard to get a read, but I'm like, this kid deserves better than this.
And then she's crying, staring at the camera as he's packing to go, and like screaming
at her. This is the part where we get the hamster and the dinner. The hamster and the dinner caused the "I never wanted to marry this pregnant bitch anyway" rant from Ed Begley Jr. And it's one of my only legit laughs of the movie, where she's like, "Dinner is served," and she opens the thing, and there had been like a minor plot two scenes ago where the kid's like, "I can't find my hamster," and then the grandpa's like looking for a hamster. Opens it up, and it's this like cream of something or other, and just a hamster.
Cream of mushroom.
Yeah.
And just sitting on top. And her response is, let me go get a strainer.
Yeah. No, I'm not eating that.
takes the lid and starts to walk away, just like leaving it there.
Yeah, I'm not eating that, so thank you so much for trying, but...
appreciate it.
I'm going to have more of that cheese and crackers platter that's in the other room, because that has a hamster in it. I don't know if you know that.
That's got a dead animal.
There's a random hamster that's not like...
it's not like a bay leaf.
But it's not like a hamster prepared to be eaten, you know? It's not like skinned and cleaned and whatever. And like, I don't want to eat that either, but I'll at least...
So if this hamster had been like skinned and cleaned and was just floating on top, like,
if it was like, you know, a ready-to-be-consumed hamster floating on top versus a furry rodent that...
gross.
Like, swam to death in burning to mushroom soup.
Yeah, it was boiled to death and or drowned.
Yes, I don't want to eat that particular hamster. No, thank you, sir. So this is So from that big fight at dinner, the parents leave, and then he starts packing up his clothes.
And she's crying at the camera, and he's like, "I work very hard at my job. Blah 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 blah. I deserve to experience the fruits of my labor." And I was like, "Dude, you're a CPA, so." Are you trying to imply that being a CPA means you get to fuck whoever you want whenever you want?
You're right. It's a little weird.
Like, if you had said, like, "I'm a professional model," maybe I'd give you that one. Maybe.
Also, I would, if it's Ed Begley Jr. making that claim, I would like to see the headshots, please.
Yeah, I want to see your 8x10 glossy.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see the campaign that you worked on and who shot it and why, because
I want to know who's your manager. Like, what company are you with?
So many more details are going to need to be explained to me, sir, before I'll just take this at face value. Have you seen your face?
And so he breaks down. He's like, assets and liabilities?
Yes.
And he's like, "I have four things." And this is where it becomes Mean Girls.
Yes, this exactly is Mean Girls.
Because he's like, "I have a house, and I have a career, and I have...
family.
A family and freedom," right?
Yeah, the freedom one is weird. Because, like, the other three are things you get as a family man or woman.
Who works. Right. And
but, like, freedom is not so much. Like... mm-mm. Like, most people I know with, like, a wife and kids are very happy, but they can't just, like, take a quick...
flit off.
Yeah, like, "Oh, I'm gonna go not come home for 3 days." That would cause a ruckus. That is not how most people's lives are at Bagley.
That is an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't think of a single person I know who is married with a child who, if they just decided not to come home for 3 days, wouldn't be the biggest thing that ever happened on Earth.
It wouldn't become, like, a Facebook campaign, calls...
Somebody would need to know where the hell somebody was, technology or no technology. Even,
seriously.
Even taking out the fact that this movie didn't have cell phones, like, somebody would need to be getting a phone call.
100%. So he walks out of the house and, like, gets in his car and, like, drives away real fast, which I think is the family car.
That is the impression I got also.
And then she comes out and screams.
Because later she takes a taxi, so it is the only car they have, yes.
And then... it's weird, because we get the moment in Mean Girls when they make the list of, like, hot body, army of skanks, hot boyfriend, or whatever.
Right.
And then it's smashed right next to the part where Regina George screams at the end of the movie and, like, plots her revenge. Because Roseanne Barr stands on the step and screams and is like, "Ah!" And then runs inside still screaming and writes out the list of his assets and is like, "I'm going to take these out one by one."
Yes, starting with an insane montage to set the house on fire.
I love that montage.
It is...
It's surreal.
I think it should be called the overkill montage.
Uh-huh. It's a hairdryer on a bed covered in pillows.
Yep.
It is four cigarettes thrown in a trash can. It is a hairdryer. No, it's an iron and some books. And the light from above the washing machine thrown into the washing machine.
Yeah. I don't know what the books were for in the washing machine.
I think they were Mary Fisher's books.
Okay. I thought, like, to me, the books should have been in the trash can that she set on fire.
With a fire, yeah. Probably.
Then four aerosol cans put in a microwave.
4 to 8.
But the thing, my favorite, and again, this is being, like, fat neckbeard, sweaty nerd, but, like, if you put a bunch of aerosols in the microwave...
it doesn't blow up.
Well, even if you're going to give that, even if I'm going to give you that it'll blow up, I don't think that's the science.
Oh, the countdown?
Yes, because it keeps flashing back and forth, like, oh, when this timer runs out, it's going to blow. No, they're just going to explode at some point. Like, she put them in the microwave. Like, it's not like the microwave isn't like a detonation device. She put a bunch of shit in there and turned it on. At some point, they blow up. It's not like, oh, we waited until you hit zero, and then we exploded. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, the best is she walks by the dog at this point, and you're like, oh, fuck, is she going to kill the dog, too?
Yeah, I totally thought the dog was going to get killed, and I was like, they can't do that. She won't be redeemable.
No, not at all. And then she lets the dog out of the house. But then we do see the dog again. Never mind.
Yeah, we see the dog a whole bunch more, including the part where it has what may be considered sex by some people with Meryl Streep.
Oh, yeah.
Sexual activity. Let's call it sexual
in
activity.
In some circles.
Let's call it sexual activity.
Yes.
But then the house explodes. Like, it doesn't catch fire. It explodes. And it's top five worst green screen of all time?
Mm-hmm. It's up there.
It's
up there.
It's like Hitchcock-era rear projection. It's like Cary Grant running from an airplane where he's like, run, 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 and clearly the airplane is not even in the same, you know, state he's in.
Anywhere near him.
Yeah. And she just like, she calmly strides to camera as the house is just like behind her, and she turns around and, like, cackles at it.
And this is where I was like, I forgot how much I love this movie, because it's so silly and fake, but so fun. It's silly fun.
It had sort of a John Waters-y element to me.
Yeah, which I think might have been why I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, not as weird as John Waters movies get, but like production-wise, it had an element of John Waters to me that kind of rang in there.
Like I said, I just kept thinking of Heathers.
Yeah, so she takes the kids, like the kids come home and the house is ruined and they're like, "Where's all our stuff?" And she's like, "Gone." And they like one by one tick off everything they own. She's like, "Yep, it's gone forever. Sorry,
it's all gone. Shut up, kids."
And then she, like, takes them in a taxi and drives to Meryl Streep's house. Mary Fisher.
And her butler answers the door, who Meryl Streep clearly used to stoop.
Yes, but is now no longer stooping.
But now that the bagel's around,
yeah.
No more stoop. So he's like an oiled-up Latino.
Yeah, he's a very clearly a stereotypical movie pool boy lover.
Yeah, like, constantly sheened. Always has an open shirt.
He's a wrestler from like 19. He's like basically Rick Rude without the giant perfume thing. Like, he's just running around.
Perfume thing?
Yeah, Rick Rude used to spray. I'm not going to get into Rick Rude and perfume. It's too long. Rick Rude had perfume as a weapon. Let's move on from that.
God.
We could go down a rabbit hole of Rick Rude.
We will another time.
We're not going to do that tonight.
Time crunch tonight.
But he's just, like, oiled up and ready to go at a moment's notice. He is just, like, he's constantly in the on-deck circle, ready for Streep.
So he lets them in the house, and he's like, oh, they're in the pool through that door.
And I'm watching this happen, and I'm like, if they walk in on their dad mid-coitus with Meryl Streep, I'm going to be deeply upset. I'm going to be deeply upset.
There are worse people you could catch your dad having sex with.
No. No, there aren't. Your dad having sex with anyone is like walking in on that scene from The Shining.
Which one?
The one where the lady turns into like the melty bits.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the bear costume.
Any of them, fine.
That's what I was saying. There's a lot of scenes in The Shining.
Okay, pick any scene in The Shining where somebody like turns and sees a thing and it shocks them. That is what it's like to walk in on your parents, I would imagine. Because mercifully, I've never done it. But like,
merciful heavens.
Like, two little girls and a bucket of blood, fine. The bear, fine. The melty, raggedy old lady, fine. Any of them.
The
just
prune
pick
lady?
One. The what?
The prune lady.
Yeah, the prune lady. Yeah. I just don't want to be involved. So,
and
of
so
course,
they kind of do.
What they do is walk in on their dad, making out naked with Meryl Streep in a weird giant pink hot tub.
No, this hot tub, the curtain surrounding the hot tub was pink, but the hot tub was not pink.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All the candles were pink then? I mean, there was just a lot of pink in this scene.
Yeah. It's because the whole hot tub was surrounded by a sheer curtain.
Okay.
That was pink. And, like, they walk in, and, like, the kid stands there and says nothing and just watches for a couple seconds.
Yeah, it's really, really freaking weird.
Because I hate her son. Like, her son is a weirdo.
I mean, they're both, yeah, he's aggressively bad. But look at his home life.
I mean, yeah. But still.
I gotta give this kid a little bit of slack for living in the
but like,
Roseanne Bagley house.
But, like, just skin a couple of women like a regular weirdo with a shitty home life.
That is 100% where this kid ends up, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He wears women.
This is the Ed Gein origin story that we've never seen before.
Ed Gainley Jr.
So
I wonder how many Ed Bagley Jr. puns we're going to get this episode.
There's going to be...
We got at least four so
far.
Yeah,
I know. It's getting ridiculous, and I can't wait to see where it goes. So this is one of the many parts where, like, and again, this makes me a terrible person, maybe, but, like, Ed Bagley Jr. is a piece of shit in this movie. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
A shit heel.
Yeah. But Roseanne, like, shows up with the kids, and, like, he clearly never wanted to have kids with her. He's a terrible human being. Yada yada. But then she's just like, here's the kids, deuces, because she's like, the kids will make your life worse. And I don't get how that's a good guy move.
Well, also, she doesn't have a house.
True, that's true.
I think it was mostly like, this is somewhere the kids can live, they will have money, also they will make your life miserable.
Yeah, but then she just, like, she never attempts to contact them. She never, like, she, I don't know.
Because she's busy destroying
Ed Bagley Jr.'s life. I know, and that's why I'm like, I have a little bit of a problem with this, that, like, a parent who gives a shit, which is not Ed Bagley Jr., like, if Ed Bagley Jr. just scoffed off and never talked to his kids again, I'd be like, yep, doesn't surprise me because he's a giant monster, but doesn't mm-hmm. really jive with the Roseanne we see in the first 30, 40 minutes of this movie.
No.
So, I'm not trying to be like, oh, women have to keep the kids in all circumstances because mothers and all that nonsense, but, like, I don't know.
Garbage humans.
I don't know. I was bothered by the, like, whatever, take the kids, sucker.
Roll out!
So...
And then we see Ed Bagley Jr.'s butt.
Yeah, we do. In a pink towel.
I want to know how many butts we've seen on this podcast. I feel like every other, at least... 75% of our movies have had a butt.
I would say we've seen it when some movies have had multiple butts. I said I think we're pretty close to like a one butt per episode average.
Yeah. I meant like
BPE, if you will.
Yeah. The BPE on this show is bananas.
It's at least a 1.0 at this point.
But I meant movies that had a butt, which I think is the less 75%.
No, that's what I'm saying. But like some movies have had two butts. So I'm saying yeah, butts per episode average is close to one.
Yes.
Like all those slasher movies, like Friday the 13th 3D has like 9 butts in it, I think.
Yeah, well, and the hockey movie we watched.
Oh yeah, there's so many butts. Yeah, that was Butt Palooza.
We saw a Swayze butt. We've seen a lot of Swayze butt on this podcast.
Dude, Swayze's butt has been in every movie. TBQH. I think
that has been the most butt we've seen.
I think we've seen his butt in every movie he's been on the show. Because remember the Ghost? Really aggressive sex scene in Roadhouse that we were.
But it's not in Ghost.
No butt in Ghost.
Is it?
Don't they do it in Ghost?
Yeah, but I don't know. We...
I thought we saw a butt.
Let me Google. Hang on.
Patrick Swayze's butt in Ghost.
Do you see butt in the movie Ghost? Ghost Succubus caught on tape on YouTube.
That's
Top Gun.
That's the one. Ghost Succubus caught on tape is the one we were looking
Top
for.
Top Gun quotes. The movie Ghost. Hang on. I don't know why Top Gun showed up there.
They're like, do you want to see butts and gay stuff? Top Gun!
Top Gun!
Highway to the butt crack zone.
Gay zone.
Why don't you just type ghost sex scene?
I know, well, usually on IMDb it tells you like...
Whose butt you see?
No, it tells you if you see like what causes the rating.
Is the it's the Tina Belcher rating system? How many yeah. butts are in this? All right, we've talked too much about the butts.
Molly's buttocks are shown being caressed while he touches her other regions as they both slump to a couch.
Okay, so no Swayze butt, but we did see a butt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do you see butt in the movie Ghost?
Suddenly, the reason why...
Hard-hitting reporter Andrew Leno.
Suddenly, the reason why you wish you were watching Ghost all the time has become so much clearer.
So... She realizes that, like, she's like, oh, mother and her kids. Oh, wait a minute, Meryl Streep has a mom.
Well, she saw Meryl Streep's mom in the early segment, the hair salon as well.
Yeah, it comes back to her, like, yeah. A click of like, oh, I'm going to do that now.
And this is how you know this is a movie set in the 80s, because Roseanne puts on a nurse outfit and knocks on the door and is like, I'd like to be a nurse here. And they're like, you're hired.
Well, it's funny because her nurse outfit is pretty much Roseanne Barr's look now.
Really?
big old glasses and pulled back hair.
Oh, I thought you meant the actual nurse outfit. I was like, why is she running around in a nurse outfit?
Like, yeah, Roseanne Barr, she moonlights as an orderly at an old folks home.
That's a weird look, Roseanne Barr. What are you doing?
But no, like, her hair and glasses look, I was like, oh, that's kind of fairly contemporary Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, yeah. She's running for office or something.
Yeah.
So
she's got big old George Romero glasses
on.
Yeah,
she does.
Like, two laptop screens glued to her face.
Double Coke bottles. She introduces us to the other orderly, Nurse Hooper, who you might recognize as the...
I always say she's Edna Mode.
Oh, well, from The Incredibles. She's the principal in Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, that's what it was. And she's in another... She's like an old lady show.
NCIS Los Angeles.
Yes.
Gig is very deeply upset with the fact that you just called probably...
I know, program, I know.
An old lady show. So
I know it's one of his stories, but... it's between that and Murder ID. Murder in the Swamp, Murder in the Bayou, Murder in the Biscuit Factory.
Murder in the Murder Palace. Wait.
Murder in the Murder
Hut. Why did anyone go to a place called a Murder Palace?
Murder in the Haunted House. Basically, like, those shows that sound like Hardy Boys mysteries.
Yes. That is the bulk of Investigation Discovery's programming. And our older brother's television
favorites. Wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Murder at the Old Mill.
This is an insane podcast. This is like a...
Yeah, we are.
You're not supposed to acknowledge it when it happens, but this is, like, way the fuck out there.
It's happening, guys. Buckle up.
But yeah, I like a word. This is why all of us young people, when we lose our jobs or can't find them, have parents who are like, just march right on in there with the briefcase and be like, I'm a hard worker and I want a job. Because that's what it used to be like. They were just jobs for everybody.
Up, and you were like, hey, I want this job. And you're like, okay, you're hired.
You sound like a real young go-getter.
I want to be your music critic. Hired.
Hey, can I have the food critic job at this prestigious national publication? Why, of course you can, son! We were waiting here for you to show up!
or Almost Famous, where it's like a 16-year-old kid gets to be the album reviewer.
That's a real thing!
I know, but like...
That really happened!
Yeah, so that's what their basis is. Yes. Oh, that used to be how it is. Yeah,
right. It's like, no, I'm unemployed for a year and a half. I probably sent 500 job applications out there. So, yeah, no, I have tried. Yes, it wasn't just me.
I've done the modern equivalent of marching in with a briefcase.
I have to say, I probably sent more job applications than any 10 people your age have sent in their whole life.
All over the country.
Every state of the union. I applied to be a writer in Alaska. That actually happened.
I applied to cover caribou infestations in Alaska.
So anyway, we're in an old folks home that you can just sign up and get jobs at. And all the old people are heavily medicated, so they just literally are like drooling on themselves in chairs. It's really
sad.
But
the one thing they won't stand for is bedwetting.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's like the big no-no.
Well, once they need actual care, they ship them off somewhere else.
Oh, that didn't click for me. I was just like, that's a weird specific.
No, they're like we want them to be here, zombies, shoving food in their faces and sleeping, but as soon as we actually have to do anything, donezo.
Okay, gotcha.
So Roseanne's like, F that noise, let me switch all these, you know, sedatives for uppers. And then all the old people are like, they have like an impromptu soccer match that breaks out.
They have a new soccer league now.
Yeah. And there's my favorite scene of that little clip is one older lady really aggressively pushing another older lady in a wheelchair, and the wheelchair lady like kicks the hell out of the soccer ball right at the camera.
Yeah, she does like a full like almost touches her nose extension with that leg. And her like sensible old lady pump with a chunky heel.
Yeah, and they are doing this soccer game to the worst rendition of "I Will Survive" that ever happened.
Yeah, I don't like it.
The music in this movie is bad. Bad, bad, bad.
It sounds like a lot of Public Domain.
Yeah, like this version of "I Will Survive" sounds like like they just went to a karaoke place that had like the MIDI file of like, and then someone really poorly sang it. And they were like, "Boom, hired. You're in our movie." So we cut to Streep's house, and she is typing away on her pink laptop, trying to get some writing done, or word processor, or whatever. And in the yard, which is enormous, by the way. the...
It's like bananas big.
Yeah. Like a size of a football field. And the daughter is there in the middle of the yard, like smack in the middle of it, in a lawn chair with a boombox.
Boombox blaring.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't think of that word.
Chunky-ass 80s telephone. Wireless telephone.
And I think this is my favorite Meryl Streep outfit of the movie, because she's dressed like the Invisible Man.
She's
100% dressed as the Invisible Man. She has on long pants, a long, like, billowy sleeve shirt, sunglasses, a sun hat, and then a scarf literally wrapped around her head and her mouth. She's 100% the Invisible Man.
It's basically, like, a scarf that's 20 feet long.
Yeah.
So it trails behind her as she walks. She can wrap it when she feels like
it. It's so weird. It's like a top five weirdest outfit we've seen on the show. We've seen Cyndi Lauper dressed as a goddamn watermelon.
That is my favorite. but
like if we were having our award show and it was the worst outfit of the season, 100% Meryl Streep wins that category for this Invisible Man ensemble.
Really?
Oh, yeah, who would possibly stand up to that in the last year?
Hang on, I would need to double-check our queue.
Bebop and Rocksteady have a better fashion sense than she does. Krang has a better fashion sense than she does.
Are you... Not Krang's, like, handler.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Krang's light-speed briefs in a robot body is better...
Oh, you are lying.
...than her literally dressed as the Invisible Man.
But this is also, like, where you realize, like, her... Meryl Streep's vocal work in this movie is kind of my favorite thing ever.
She is by far the best part of this movie.
I think she and Roseanne are top two, actors-wise.
But Roseanne doesn't do a whole lot of stuff that I haven't seen her do before. This is kind of a different Meryl Streep performance for me.
Yeah, because every line is very whispery and romantic. And even when she tries to yell at the kid, she's like... What are the kid's name? Nicole, we'll say.
I, if you put a gun in my mouth and asked me to write it on a piece of paper, you would be cleaning my brains off the wall.
We'll say Nicole. That feels right.
I literally, they're on the screen for like 6 cumulative minutes together. There's no screen time for these children.
Because they don't matter.
I know, but like the only reason they're in this movie is so...
Nicolette! Oh, I was so close!
The only reason that... those kids are in this movie is so Roseanne can shove them off on the bagels and then bounce the hell out of this movie for a while.
This is true. But she's like, Nicolette! Over the blaring of the jukebox.
Yeah, she's...
And then, like, Nicolette! Nicolette! And, like, you hear the break, yeah. And it is so wonderful when she breaks that voice.
Yes. And this adds to my long line of, I like every Meryl Streep performance I've ever seen, and I don't like a single one of the movies.
Really?
Yeah. I've never watched a Meryl Streep movie and I'm like, I need to see that again ever in my life.
What?
Yeah, never once. I think she's, no question, one of the top 10, I'm not dividing by gender lines, I think she's one of the top 10 actors.
Top 5, I would argue.
Well, I was going to say a bigger thing than I think you're going to say. Right now, certainly probably in the top 5. I was thinking of all time, she's probably in the conversation for the top 10 best ever, male or female.
Oh. Yeah,
I think she's wonderful. I think she's stupendous, and I think every time I see her, I'm like, man, she's incredible. But the movies are either like super duper drama bummers where I'm just like, ugh, or they're kind of a niche comedy thing where I just don't like. Devil Wears Prada is a fine movie, but if I never saw it again, I don't think my life would be less enriched.
Shockingly, that's one of my favorite movies ever.
I know. I'm a monster. I get it. It's okay.
Like I have it. I'm pretty sure I have a Devil Wears Prada like digital copy on my iPhone.
That's fine. It's perfectly good. There's lots of good performance, except the weird entourage guy snuck in there somehow. But the rest of the movie is good. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so I'm Team Streep, but
yeah,
not the movie.
Because I agree, Julie and Julia. I want to see just Julia.
Yeah. Like I'll never watch that.
Like
movie
I want
again.
I literally wanted to be called just Julia, and they've edited it so it's only the Meryl Streep.
I'm sure that
Julia
has been
parts.
Done on the internet because everyone's like, "Holy shit! Why do I care about this other half of this movie? It's so stupid.
It's garbage."
Yes.
And that woman is garbage. Sorry, I won't.
Okay, we need to rein it in because we are like halfway through this movie and we are currently at minute 55 of the recording. So we need to rein it in.
So Meryl Streep's trying to like get the dog, like the kid's being an asshole to the dog, and she's like, "Throw that stick away immediately!" And the kid whips it over the edge of the cliff.
Did you know this was coming exactly the way it was going to play out the first time you saw this movie? Because I was like, "Oh, that poodle's dying right now." that. I was so glad that
as soon as she said throw that stick away, I was like, uh-oh.
Yes, go on.
She whips the stick over the he whips the stick over the cliff, and the poodle runs after it and like springboards over the edge of the cliff.
It's like the dog acting by this poodle is so good in that scene.
But here's the thing, my counterpoint to the dog dying would have been, I want the dog to be in a full doggy body cast.
Okay, I would have liked that too. And Streep is like pushing it around in a pink. It's a pink body cast, and she's
a pink body cast. It's got wheels on the edge of the feet.
Oh no, I was having the dog in a baby carriage.
That too,
like
but
a pink pram.
I got you, but I'm thinking like it's got little wheels on each of its feet, and she's like pulling it on a leash, and it's just like behind her. So the dog dies. She makes a giant-ass tombstone, like the tombstone they made for Professor X in that shitty third X-Men movie. That's what she has for her dog.
There are public burials for prestigious world leaders that aren't as big as this dog's.
It's wonderful.
And it's on a different lawn than we saw before, equally as large, and also smack in the middle of it. So this is where Roseanne meets her mother. And I wasn't watching the best quality version of this that is possible. That's played by a 57-year-old woman in age makeup.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah. Because she looks like 80 years old.
We don't know how old. No, they don't know how old she is. It says disputed on Wikipedia.
The birth date I saw was 1932.
I don't see a birth date on here.
It's on her IMDb page.
Oh, on IMDb.
Which is also user submitted and could be bullshit, but it says she's...
Because on Wikipedia it says disputed.
Well, she's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is 28 years old. So she couldn't have been...
1932.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. She looks...
It's funny because right now she looks like she did in the movie.
Yeah, I know. That's why I pulled up her picture and I was like, oh, that must be really old. No, that's a very clear, sharp image. What is... Oh, that's just decent. This movie had good age makeup, I guess.
That was what it got.
So Roseanne and her starts hatching the plan with her and like to get her out of there so she can go ruin the life of Mary Fisher as well as Ed Bagels. And Streep comes back inside after mourning her dog for quite a long time and is like trying to get the kids to do something. And you ready? This is like maximum nerdy because we only see it on the TV for like 21 seconds. But they're watching GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And there's a fabulous documentary about GLOW on Netflix, or at least it was within the past couple months. But even further, to bring back Orange is the New Black, the woman who created that show is creating a show for Netflix about GLOW. And I
really
cannot wait. So excited. Max, if there was a dream television show for me to write on, now the Parks and Rec is over, it's now become this unproduced that I know nothing about GLOW program.
I want to know who's cast in that show.
It hasn't started yet, but boy, can I not wait for it, because holy cow, GLOW is amazing. You should all go look it up, the great documentary, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Anyway, they're watching GLOW, and the maid is dealing with a bunch of dog poop, and they're like, the kids are like, we don't have any clothes, we need to do laundry. So Meryl Streep's response is to like randomly pick up like 6 articles of clothing of different colors, dump them in the washing machine and pour an entire bottle of Clorox in and then an entire box of dryer sheets into the washing machine.
Did dryer sheets used to be like that? Like a roll of aluminum foil or wax paper?
I've never encountered them that weren't pre-cut.
Yeah. I don't use them, but...
Yeah, I don't use them either, but I've never seen them that weren't pre-cut. I've always seen people pull it out like a tissue. Anyway, so she ruins all of their clothes.
And then... Roseanne Barr is like, Meryl Streep's mom, you should go visit Meryl Streep if you want to.
Yeah. So she sends her out to visit the Streep compound. Because that's then, what it is. It's a compound.
Yeah. Takes the bedpan and just, like, dumps it.
Which, the other thing, too, is, like, the amount of pee in this bedpan leads me to believe they're like, not
Jesus
often
Christ.
Emptying bedpans in this facility.
Yeah. How often is this place emptying bedpans?
This is like
once a month?
This is like if you were to like plug up a trough at the Veteran Stadium and dump it out in the seventh inning. Like it is like a gallon and a half of pee that she
it's
dumps.
It's so gross.
It's like too much pee for this bit is what it is.
Too much pee.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon clearly had a part.
That's right. Vince showed out more pee.
So then Meryl Streep's talking to Edna Mode, And Edna Mode's like, I have $55,000 with nothing to do with it.
Roseanne is talking to Edna Mode.
What did I say?
Meryl Streep. Wrong lead.
I wish I was talking about Meryl Streep. Yeah, Roseanne Barr is talking to Edna Mode, who's like, I have $55,000 and nothing to do with
while
it.
While eating a donut.
Yeah, a big ol' eclair just, like, unhinged your jaw.
I'm slammed it all the way in. By declaring an eclair a donut, but it's basically a donut.
It is. And she's like, money's no good unless you do something good with it. Which to me feels like how people don't hold on to their money. Like, that logic is how people go broke.
Well, that's true. She was married to a CPA, but she wasn't a CPA.
And then the woman who owns the place is like, hang on, both of you get in here. Meryl Streep's mom isn't wet in the bed. You lied about it, Roseanne Barr. GTFO, yeah. You're fired.
And so Roseanne gets on a bus, and then she's like boarding the bus. Edna Mode comes sprinting alongside and is like, wait, I'm coming with you.
And she doesn't stop the bus.
Nope.
It bothers me.
Yeah, she doesn't that say, she wait. Doesn't... No, it is bad because she's also terrible in this movie.
On your side. She's on your side, lady. And then the woman calls Meryl Streep and is like, look, your mom wets the bed. We can't keep her anymore. But then admits that her mom has nothing wrong with her.
Right.
And it's like, she just needs to spend time with her kid, you piece of shit.
She needs some TLC. Bye. What's that?
A new drug? No. Tender love and care. Be a daughter.
So, Hooper, which is the real name of Edna Mode's character, and Roseanne buy a huge property together. And by buy a huge property together, I mean Edna Mode buys a huge property and Roseanne just, like, has it. And then
it's like a really shitty rundown warehouse just on the river, nothing around it.
Next to huge skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 60-foot tower and then the up house.
It's like the house and up.
Yes, exactly. Same reference at the same time. So we get a fixing stuff up montage.
That's about 10 seconds long.
Yep. And then like bam, okay, now we have a brand new pink building that's a job placement center for women.
An employment agency, because somehow I guess we have that credibility.
Sure. And then to advertise it, we're going to print up 1,000 flyers and throw them off this building in Times Square.
Well, because she's like, my business, I want to find jobs for women like me, that women that life has thrown away, blah, 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 blah. I know just where to find them. And I was like, oh, they're going to go to like the makeup counter and find the ugly women, or like, I don't know, go to the supermarket and find the moms.
No.
And I was like, no, it's just Times Square, a place that we've never mentioned before in this movie.
We're pretty sure Roseanne might not have ever been to, because every time she mentions coming to the city, Ed Billy Jr.'s like, no, stay at home, you're worthless.
Yeah. So they rain flyers down, and all the kind of people in the city show up.
And it's a real, like, pre-Disneyland Times Square, which I kind of like. We see the Batman logo.
It's gritty.
Yeah, oh, it's gritty. The big clock is sponsored by a whiskey company that I've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. We got the Batman logo, which is pretty rad, because obviously this was filmed in 89 or 88 when that movie was gearing up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a grittier, grosser Times Square. Not that we're from New York and have any affinity for the place. Any history with the place, really.
Yeah.
Not affinity for
it. There's no M&M store.
Yeah, no. There's not a bubblegum shrimp company and a rock and roll or hard rock cafe. So this is like a nine. This is one of my many problems with this movie. Of like, it's a 9-step revenge plan. That's like, okay, this sequence of it is create a job agency, get lots of women jobs. Then put several of these women in key positions to help me execute this plan down the road. She's like a supervillain. Like,
no, you know what it is? It's like the evil organization in No Holds Barred. Remember?
Yeah, that like
they put all those people through college.
Yeah, that's what she like. One of the women she gets it. Like, we spend way too much time with this woman. Like, do you have any skills? She's like, well, I used to keep my husband's books at home. She's like, great, you've been this and this and this. And she somehow gets this woman a job. Like, we never see what she... It's not like, oh...
Well, here's the thing. They show you this woman as a bookkeeper. And then Ed Begley Jr. later needs a bookkeeper.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they're going to send the Asian woman.
Right, this is...
No, here's a hot young character we're just going to introduce you to. Bye.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Because, like, this is way less convoluted if you just be like... She's like some hot, dumb woman. Nope. That's like, oh, I don't know what to do. And then she's like, oh, I got a job for you. And then she's like going to get her onto Ed Begley Jr.'s radar. So this woman just like disappears out of the movie. And then our transition from, like, Roseanne's fixing up ladies montage to back to Ed Begley Jr. is a commercial on the television with that the security guard is watching that's Edna Mode and a bunch of women who are, like, you know, empowered with jobs. And then Edna Mode disappears from the movie.
Yep. Just gone.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah.
Thanks for fronting this business.
Yeah. Thank you for being the key part of this coming together. And now, fuck off forever?
Sure. Here's some health insurance, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know how we're going to afford that because I don't know anything about business.
I got you another bus ticket. The destination is nowhere.
Hell.
She's actually the devil in your universe.
Yeah.
So she hooks him up with this, like, real hot young bookkeeper who immediately starts having sex with him because he's a scumbag.
Well, here's the thing.
He immediately puts the moves on because he is a scumbag. She is not a scumbag for sleeping with him.
No, he isn't.
I mean, I would question her taste. I have no problem playing that.
I question all of their tastes.
Have you looked at the man that you're fawning over?
Come on, guys. You're not all drunk. Because I guess it's like a fucking dating website from the 80s where everyone puts in a video submission to be employed by the agency.
Yes.
And she's like, well, I'm a bookkeeper and executive assistant, and I want to find a nice rich man and marry him.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not what you put in your application.
Super Duper is not. So Streep has finished her latest book, which is like Love in the Spin Cycle.
Rinse Cycle,
sorry. And the publisher's like, yeah, no, this is terrible. We're not going to publish this book.
This is garbage, yeah. Lady.
And so this is one of the other, like, this is much like our Ghostbusters discussion where, like, the last half hour just becomes all the hand-waving. The publisher's like, we're not going to publish this book. And Streep's like, well, I'll go to a different publisher. And the publisher's like, well, just think about it for a day. And then, like, later, I'm skipping some stuff. We'll circle back. Cut to the publisher, Streep, and Ed Begley Jr. sitting at a table after this book has been published and no one has any interest in it. Like, what? How did that come around?
Well, I thought we said we weren't going to publish this book.
Right. Why did you go back on your promise? What has happened?
I thought maybe the publisher didn't publish the book. She was just there as, like, I'm going to say I told you so because I won.
Right. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Anyway. Ed Begley Jr. comes home and has a big fight with Meryl Streep because he's been cheating on her and not been around the house. So, of course, Streep is like...
I'm raising your fucking kids.
You disgusting pile of trash.
That I never wanted. I super never wanted. They are biologically your children.
You gangly mop. Get a hold of this.
You muppet with legs.
Get a hold of your life.
So she loses her mind.
This is my favorite bit of physical comedy from Streep because, like, she's on the bed and he's like, forget it, I'm going to sleep on the couch tonight, and, like, grabs the blanket and the pillow and starts leaving. And she's, like, desperately clinging to it and getting, like, dragged off the bed and spinning like an alligator roll. Like, everything about it is wonderful because it's just so totally out of character.
She burritos herself in the comforter.
Yeah, she's just like,
and then on the floor pokes her head out like a hermit crab.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
It sounded like you said fantastic.
I did. I don't know where it came from. It's pretty fantastic.
Is this a vampire movie now?
Do
you know that Meryl Streep almost played the She-Devil character?
I did see that, and I'm glad she didn't, because this is way better for her.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This is also the scene where, you know, Ed Begley Jr. goes to sleep on the couch, and she wakes up to her feet being licked and is like... Oh, vaguely.
It's that classic scene in movies.
Yeah. You know, of like, clearly. But it's a twist on that because normally it's like the dog is like licking a cheek or something. It licking the feet was an interesting twist, I felt like.
It was.
Yeah. You're the cinnamon raisin of my dreams. And then she opens her eyes and it's a dog licking her feet. And she just freaks out, of course.
Yeah, loses her mind. Ed Begley Jr., the secretary is like, or the bookkeeper is like, I'm in love with him, Roseanne Barr. And she's like, you should tell him.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So she does as he, like, photocopies her ass.
Yeah, he says it's time to take pictures. And he starts stooping her on the copy machine.
Photocopier.
Yeah, yeah. While it spits out copy after. Like, how many copies did you make?
Yeah.
Did you need 28 copies of this particular transaction in your life? What are you doing?
So he fires her. And then Roseanne Barr goes, sounds like he really used you. And I was like, no, bitch, you used her.
Yeah.
You knew exactly what would happen when she says, I love you, Ed Begley Jr.
Right, you're like a manipulative monster at this point. What are you doing to this poor honey, whatever the hell, Olivia Honey, right? Olivia Honey, yeah.
Yeah, Olivia Honey. So then she's like, actually, he's cheating his clients by this thing, this math.
Yeah, and like, how is this just the generic go-to for every freaking movie about computer crime?
He skims the interest off their account. Yeah, and wires
that's
it to
every
a bank
movie
in Switzerland.
Of computer crime. That's the they do it in Office Space, and they're like, oh, this is the thing they do in all of the movies. It's like in Superman 4, and in this, and just like constantly, people are. That's basically what they do in Ghost too, like skimming.
Yeah, the Swiss bank.
Yeah, like, but it's like the bit that you're supposed to round off. They just take.
Yeah, how do people not notice that? I feel like I would catch that.
Well, the whole idea of it is it's like fractions of a penny, and so many thousands of times if you get fractions of a penny, it adds up to money, but the people never notice because it's out of their account almost nothing.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's like a rounding error, basically, but instead of rounding it, you take it.
Yeah.
Illegal, but, like, cover your tracks better, Ed.
So they go in, and they're like, oh, we're going to make this apparent and transfer a shit ton of money to his account. And then Roseanne Barr, like, goes through the drawers and sees the photocopies of her ass and is like, I know what to do with these, and sends them off to Meryl Streep.
Yeah, which is brilliant. The only time anyone does anything crime-related in this movie that's intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's not really crime-related. But still clandestine.
Yes. Yeah. And so Meryl Streep runs out of that car, jumps out of, like, sees them, slaps them in the face and jumps out of the car and sprints across the lawn.
Yeah, well, not across the lawn, across the weird circle of grass that she makes people drive in a circle around in her driveway because it is big enough that you could...
It's a rich people driveway. Yeah. I've seen those commonly.
Yeah.
So you never have to back out of the driveway.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. So everybody quits at the Streep compound. The maid quits. She fires the
pool boy.
The pool boy. Butler, whatever he's supposed to be.
Because he was making out with a 10-year-old?
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. Maybe 15, but certainly not of legal age, you adult
at all.
Monster.
And doesn't he... It's not even... Okay, this sounds gross, but it's not even like she looks old.
Yeah.
It's not like she's...
She's a very childlike-looking person. It's not like, oh, she's someone who looks way older, and she lied to him because she was into him, and there's like a whole... It's like, no, it's a child. He's gross. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
The grandmother, meanwhile, is just like cheering it on.
Cheering on, swinging back. I want to be the grandmother when I grow up.
She seems like a pretty awful person. I hope you're not her.
The grandmother's not awful.
She's pretty terrible.
I didn't think she was that bad.
She's like calling the pool boy names that I'm sure are probably racist. Drinking too
using
much.
Using a lot of space. Drinking too much is just fine with me. When I'm that old, who cares?
I guess that's true. She did spend the last 5 years sedated into the point of coma.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's my time to shine.
Right. So Streep's throwing a big party, and I don't remember why.
I think it was just to affirm her social status.
Oh, like her book's a bomb, but we're still here?
Yeah.
Okay. And so Ed Begley Jr. gives a nice toast where he's like, you're the love of my life, everything about you is wonderful.
Like 5 seconds after she leaned in and was like, I still think you're fucking disgusting, so just be nice to my friends for the time being.
Yeah, yeah, because he's a...
Like whisper in his ear.
Because he's a gross monster. I think it's wonderful. So as he, like... gives this wonderful toast, it ends with the IRS and the police walking in like, hey, you're a huge criminal. You're arrested now.
Bye.
Yep. Later.
And then his lawyer is like, don't worry, we're going to get the judge, whatever. And he's golf buddies with my dad and always goes easy on white dudes.
White collar crime.
I mean...
I'm just saying the light of the movie isn't white
dudes. It was white collar crime.
Yeah. Your message is correct.
The subtext was he goes super easy on rich white dudes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just didn't want to know how much we're going to get into race discussions in this show, given the
we're not. That is all
and
I'm going to say.
The other judge is a black lady.
So then Meryl Streep calls the Asian lady from before, who was like, "I did my husband's bookkeeping."
Keep calling Roseanne Meryl Streep. That's the third time. What the hell? They're opposite characters in the movie.
It's because I just want to keep talking about Meryl Streep.
Roseanne.
Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr.
calls Roseanne the Asian Barr lady.
Calls the Asian lady who was a bookkeeper before that we thought was going to become a Bailey's assistant, but it was not.
Yeah.
And she's now a legal assistant, I guess?
I think she's just like a clerk.
And so she's like, oh, I can switch what... I can just go up to the board and switch what judge gets what case.
Yeah, it's not... I have that ability.
I was like, I'm pretty sure there's more to it than just the name on the board. Like,
well, it's...
the judge probably gets the case beforehand.
Yeah.
Reviews it.
That is what they do, yes. There is... It is something the judge would be confused about, although... technically, if that judge is golf buddies and playing golf with one of the lawyers, he probably shouldn't be presiding over his case.
Right. Anyways. So, they get this awesome black lady who's like, hey, you're a huge criminal. You're going to jail. Here's your fine.
Yeah, get out of my sight. Jail and fine. Get out.
Get out of my face.
And Roseanne is like, with her head wrapped up in a scarf in the courtroom audience, just like watching it with evil eyes.
Yeah, she's a little, doing a little bit of a, like, 40s actress meets Invisible Man.
Yes, absolutely. But not as Invisible Man as the street.
No, not as wonderful as that. So that takes care of all of his liabilities, or whatever.
Yeah, she's officially, like, ruined his life in every imaginable way possible.
And then Meryl Streep writes a book about her awful experience living with Ed Begley Jr.
Yeah, and is like, oh, I had to be a mother for 2 whole weeks.
It's wildly successful.
Yeah, it's weird that would be so successful.
Well, I don't think it was about her being a mom. I think it was about her hellish experience with him.
No, I get that, but she goes from, like, writing trashy romance sex novels to, like, oh, I had to be a mother for 2 weeks.
I thought it was about, like, he stole from me and used me.
Yeah, I guess he did. I assumed she got her money back, though.
Yeah, but she's, you can still write about getting stolen from.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then Roseanne goes up and's like, can you sign it to Ruth? And Roseanne Barr looks at her, and there's a moment of like, do I know you? And then her eyes flash red.
Yes. See, and her eyes flashed at one other point in the movie, and I was like, oh, is this actually supernatural? But it is not in any way supernatural.
It's not.
No.
The only thing that I think would have made this movie, would make this movie cooler is because she's wearing all white, and then they play the Devil in Disguise song by Elvis.
Yeah.
As thousands of women in red jackets and little rose pins that signify they work for her agency flood the street behind her.
Right.
And she's in white. And I get that visually, that's cool. But I kind of, like, since the song is Devil in Disguise,
yeah,
it would have been cool if she had, like, taken off her jacket, her white jacket, and had a red one underneath and, like, thrown the white jacket away.
Yeah, or yeah, anything like that would have been awesome. Agreed. Even just, like, a vest underneath that was red. She loosened a button and you could see a flash of red. Anything like that would have been more visually interesting. Mm-hmm.
But that is She-Devil.
That's the end of this movie. Final thoughts?
We buy a nose.
Final thoughts?
I enjoy this movie. I really like it. I think it's fun. It's not my favorite movie in the world, but I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think you like this a lot more than I do.
I figured I would.
Yeah. It's not abjectly terrible, like a lot of the stuff.
Well, that's right. Like, it's not bad at all.
It's not good either. It's like firmly in that middle ground, and it's a little bit too long and not interesting enough to be like a good laying on the couch on a Sunday afternoon movie. Also, I don't know when you'd be watching it because I've never even heard of it before you brought it to my attention. So it's not like this is on regular rotation on TBS or something.
I'm surprised it doesn't get more play on like Hallmark.
Yeah, this does.
For Lifetime.
Yeah, it's probably expensive because Streep's in it.
Oh, probably.
So I would not recommend this, but it sounds like you would.
I would.
Okay.
I think I like it.
Can we get a theme song?
Oh, fuck. I forgot about that. I thought Devil in Disguise was the theme song to this movie.
I don't think it's good enough.
I don't have one.
I suppose we should do our final... This is the final ever... Well, maybe not final ever. You never know. Things might come back. But the probably last... Or at least the last regular hot tag. I downgraded that so quickly. I climbed down that ladder so fast. Yeah. I was like, nope, back up. Nope, not quite. And 1 foot off the floor. Perfect. This is the height.
Yeah, you were one rung off the floor.
Everybody's favorite segment of the show, retiring to the golden pastures of old bits. By the hot tag taglines. Hot tag tagline.
She-Devil. She is not Meryl Streep, Andrew.
Right, hot tag tagline. She-Devil. The one where Meryl Streep's dressed like the Invisible Man. thank you so much for listening to the show. This is our 50th episode. It's pretty exciting. We're coming it up on doing 2 years of this. Pretty special. If you like the show, please, 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 please go rate and review us on iTunes. It makes a huge difference for us. It doesn't take that much time. Like, not exaggerating when I say you could probably rate and review the show in the time you're listening to me ask you rate and review the show. We will read them on the air, but most importantly, it helps us get out in front of new shows and meet new fans and have new things happen for us. So please, please, please do that. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/dissectomania.
Instagram.com/dissectintheeighties or dissectintheeighties on the app.
And Facebook.com/dissectintheeighties also has everything you need there. And lastly, dissectintheeighties.com is where you can find everything you'd ever wanted to know about the show. How about a clue for the next episode?
I don't know.
That's right, because it's a surprise for you. We will probably also be getting rid of clues. I think that's going to be a thing in season 3. We will just tell you what we're going to do. But for 2 more episodes, we're going to keep it a secret. So
spooky secrets.
We'll see you in 2 weeks, Dissectomaniacs.
Don't you forget about me.
So this is the, for purposes of discussion anyway, the second anniversary of the show. We're a little early, but we got to do it this way. It'll make sense later. Two important things. One, it's the Cotton anniversary. So we're...
Thank God you know these things, Mr. Mr. Against the Wedding Industry knows every damn anniversary.
Well, there's a list online. All you have to do is type in what are the anniversary things, and it comes up.
Okay, whatever you say.
I'm not. I don't think this is counts as the wedding industry. Like, I think this is a really cool way to give your partner a gift that's a little bit random and unique and interesting. Last year was paper. This year's cotton. I like that. It's not like get your lover another diamond. So for Cotton Anniversary...
Diamond is one of them, isn't it?
I'm sure, but I'm never going to get you a diamond, just so you
hey,
know.
Hey, fuck you.
This year, you are getting the first t-shirt with Dissecting the 80s on it. This isn't for sale, but this is the first official Macho Mandrew t-shirt.
I love it so much.
It's got Andrew's face on it, and it says, I wish I was watching Ghost. So you'll be able to see me wearing one of these at the Baltimore Podcast Festival.
Oh, you're getting one too?
Oh, of course. I designed a shirt. I'm buying one.
And then I am craftier, and I like to make t-shirts with iron-on letters and such. So Trip is getting a t-shirt that says, we gotta go back, Marty, but without the shitty Doc Brown impression.
The shitty Doc Brown impression is kind of my favorite part.
I know, I know.
You. That's wonderful.
You're welcome.
But most importantly, we need to add 2 new people or things or some objects of some sort to the Dissecting the 80s Hall of Fame. Last year, the 2 entries were Cyndi Lauper from Andrew and Bruce the Shark from me. And as is tradition, we do not discuss this beforehand, so it's always a crapshoot whether we might select the same person. I'm terribly afraid that you have done it this year. But
I'm going to go first, please.
Yeah, go ahead. Who is the next member of the Dissect the 80s Hall of Fame?
In keeping with tradition of my empowered ladies of the 80s, really good friend of the show, Leah Thompson.
Wonderful pick. Wonderful choice.
Is that who you picked?
It is not.
Oh, thank God.
But Leah, we're bestowing upon you the golden VHS tape.
Yeah, the golden title. The golden title.
The golden tape. We have an actual VHS tape that's gold, and we put the names of every Hall of Fame member upon it. We can put a picture up of eventually. So.
Also, I think we should make a golden VHS tape just for her and like carry it around if we're at like.
Well, here's
event.
What I'll do. I'll send it to her on Twitter, and if she responds, I will actually send her a golden VHS tape with her name.
Oh my God, I would die. I would die.
So everybody out there, when you see me tweet to Leah Thompson, please tweet at her. Please retweet it and tweet at her. Because Leah, we'd love to have you on the show. We'll do a special.
I would die if we got Leah Thompson on this show.
Maybe
because we'd have to do a different. We'd have to do a different one of her movies.
No, we would just do a very special Dissecting the 80s and interview Leah.
Yeah, I know, but I would love to have her like discuss one of her 80s movies with her.
You think we could get an hour and a half of her time to talk about it at length?
No,
that we do?
It would be like a half hour. Like
I would rather just talk to her about a bunch of stuff, and we could fill it in. Whatever movie we're about to do, we could ask her a bunch of questions about. But I have a lot of questions for her about a lot of things. She was in Howard the Duck, for Christ's sake.
The space program.
Yeah, she's been on the show 100 times. So I have my pick as well, and It is not an animal this year, but I was sure you were going to pick this person because not only have we featured this person many times on the program, at least, I think, three, and is part of our first ever live show, the one and only, rest in peace, Sir Patrick Swayze.
I was like, Jennifer Grey?
maybe down the road for Jennifer, but Patrick. And it kills me to do this because I don't think we're going to get another opportunity to bring Sam into the Hall of Fame, but I felt like Swayze was the more important one to do. So Sam Elliott may never, maybe a permanent snub on the Hall of Fame.
Well, what's wrong with next year? It could happen.
If we don't cover his show, there's not a lot of his stuff left.
Oh, I didn't realize it had to be like that season.
Yeah. Swayze was covered twice in year two, or once in year two, and then the special live episode. So yeah, welcome to the Hall of Fame, Leah Thompson and Patrick Swayze, posthumously. We are
Madame Leah Thompson.
We are thrilled to have you there on the Golden Tape, and maybe we'll get to talk to you. That would be pretty darn sweet, I think. Well, thank you all so much for going on this journey with us over the last 2 years. It's been really thrilling to watch the audience be more than just our mother, although we do love you, Mom. We're glad that you're listening to
us.
But it's cool to have people that we don't know interact with us, and really kind of spectacular that we get to take this weird journey through the 1980s with you guys, one piece of pop culture at a time. So thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much for listening to the show. It means a whole hell of a lot to us that there are people out there who want to hear what we have to say on this topic, and we're excited to keep doing it for you, and we're really excited that it's turned into these live shows, and I'm excited to see what happens. So please tell your friends, spread the word, all that fun stuff, and if you ever want to get a hold of us, you know how to do it. So please reach out, throw us a movie suggestion, or tell us that you hate us or whatever. That's fine.
I will fight you.
But
I will go Queens, New York on your ass, and I will fight you.
But yeah, thank you. We love you guys.
Don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production.
We gotta go back, Marty. We gotta go dice. Oh, yeah. Fuck, I forgot my fucking line.
It's your blank.
I know.